Welcome to another edition of Pioneer Radio, a student-centered program bringing you the voices of Indian River State College from the campus to the community in partnership with WQCS. I'm your host, Bill Piacese. In today's episode, Jenny Champagne drops by the studio and discusses the benefits of the LEAP program here at IRSC.
We're like the open arms of the college, and that welcoming smile that a new person wants to see when they're entering into a new environment.
Joe Phelps talks with student poet Antravius Solin about the art of storytelling through spoken word.
There's a difference between poems you write that can be heard and poems that you write that's like you read to yourself. Although I've never written a poem to help somebody either. I just kind of tell all my stories, man. I feel like that's the best way to help somebody, is tell them your story. Like, man, you don't know what I'm going through. Here's a story for you, man.
Pioneer Radio's Carrie Dolcio sits down with Dr. Danny Huey, director of IRSC's Division of Minority Affairs, and talks about how he still has hope that students, regardless of their background, will reach their potential.
I still have hope that even if I don't affect everybody at Indian River State College, if I can affect a small portion of folks, right, to start to think differently about people, and if I didn't, I probably wouldn't do this job.
Poet Dr. Octavio Quintanilla was recently on the IRSC campus to discuss how his life growing up as a Mexican-American child in the borderlands of South Texas ultimately shaped his poetry.
The overall violence that I was exposed to, that I was really not aware that it was a violence, was obviously the lack of things, poverty, you know, those kind of things that later on you realize that, hey, there's an undercurrent of violence.
After that, Bridget Fadden speaks with IRSC Campus Coalition Government President Manny Rubio and Vice President Jerusha Toussaint, who share their insights as to the ways in which students can fully utilize all that the college has to offer.
I know a lot of people are afraid of failing. You know, I myself, too, was afraid of failing. But there's no such thing as failing if you look at it. There's only a chance for opportunity to learn.
Joe Phelps talks with the IRSC Performing Arts students about their upcoming stage production of Dr. Seuss's The Cat in the Hat.
There's a lot of everything happening at once. It's a lot more fun than like a serious drama because you're always running around doing something. I'm always sweating. Whatever. There's so much sweat everywhere.
And finally, wrapping up our second show, our own Carrie Dolcio presents his thoughts on communication and how it will evolve as we move forward. But first, he shares his thoughts on the nuance of information, whether interpersonal or global.
Let's have a nuanced look at information. It's a resource that allows people, as a collective and as individuals, to make informed decisions and build connections that influence their everyday lives, as well as the world around them. Furthermore, it can be shared through any medium, whether it is through social media, television, newspapers, books, videos, pictures, carvings, or simply word of mouth. Information is an amorphous and beautiful thing that, even when shaped and altered slightly from perspective to perspective, its true form is always able to be rediscovered, reanalyzed, and redistributed. Access to shared information should never be available only to the lucky few, but rather to any and everyone. It should not be held from someone because we think that he or she is too young to understand, too biased to possibly change, too ignorant to possibly learn, or is too marginalized to care. Access to information should simply be a given, a right in fact. But there has to be a line drawn somewhere, right? I mean, all of this is not to say that all information is precious and true. The importance we give to specific pieces of information is likely to vary from group to group, as well as with person to person. For example, I don't need to know what you had for breakfast this morning, and you don't need to know what color underwear I'm wearing right now. One of the things that should be taken into account is the impact that the given information may have on a person's life. Is it for the better or is it for the worse? Does it have a huge impact or does it not really matter that much at all? Different choices can be made depending on the scenario. There is also the issue of misinformation, which can be found across all media and social outlets. What percentage of the information readily available to us is accurate, and what percentage of it is inaccurate? Well, there's just too much out there to know. But whether misinformation is spread intentionally or unintentionally, the buck stops with you. It is up to the person acquiring the information to analyze and question its validity. Information should never be immediately taken at face value to be true without performing one's due diligence and making sure that the source of the information is credible, that it has been checked for flaws, and that it isn't missing any key details. This philosophy of information also doesn't argue that all information is meant to be divulged. We are all entitled to a level of secrecy, celebrities, politicians, and next-door neighbors included. The inner workings of our personal lives should be kept private, should we want them to be. As such, the unwarranted release of information that we as individuals are entitled to keep secret is simply unethical, and in many cases, it is actually against the law. Now, let's think about information at a global level. A nation's security should always be a priority. The coordinates of a military convoy, for example, should not be published, especially with the lives of soldiers at stake. The safety and security of everyone involved should always be taken into account when divulging information. But there's a caveat to all of this. The actions of a country's leaders usually reflect back upon the citizens, and there can often be attempts to conceal important information that reveals certain acts done in that country's name. In the U.S., this issue can be found in discussions such as Edward Snowden's NSA leaked documents and the CIA's torture report. Should these pieces of information have been revealed to the public? Strong arguments can be made on both sides, but what it usually comes down to is, what is the greater good? Although this is an important question in and of itself, I believe that the better question to be asked is, will the discovery of this information lead us into becoming a better society? So far, from what I can tell, I'd say that answer is yes.
You're listening to Pioneer Radio. So we'd like to welcome to the show Jenny Champagne from the LEAP program here at Indian River State College. Welcome to the show, Jenny. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's awesome being here.
What does the acronym LEAP stand for?
It stands for Leadership, Empowerment, Achievement, and Persistence. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we use those specific words is because that's what we want our students to reflect, those specific words, leadership, empowerment, achievement, and persistence. That's what you need in order to reach that success that you're looking for.
When did you start the LEAP program?
Oh, I wish I could take credit for that, but I actually didn't start it. Back in 2008, the Division of Minority Affairs, under the leadership of Adrienne Jefferson, then dean, she's the one who came up with the brilliant idea of actually targeting some underrepresented students. And it has grown into what we now have as the LEAP Mentorship Institute. And it's been taking a while to get to this point. And even though we're at this point now, it's going to take a while longer to really develop it into what her vision initially was and what I have adopted as my vision now.
So, Jenny, tell us a little more in depth what exactly constitutes the LEAP program. When an incoming student, first-time student, joins Indian River State College and becomes a member of the LEAP program, what can they expect?
We're like the open arms of the college, mm-hmm. and that welcoming smile that a new person wants to see when they're entering into a new environment. And we start off with that let me hold your hand, let me take you to this department, let me introduce you to this person. There are other students in the same mindset that you're in right now. Just that comfort. We bring that comfort level back into the experience of being in a new space. But we take you from that and travel everywhere, basically. We travel everywhere. And I don't mean by physically travel everywhere. We have workshops for these students that really make them start thinking about the things that they're encountering here on campus, but also off campus. Because let's remember, eventually the students are going to leave us. But when they leave us, what did we give them? What was the gift that they received from IRSC? So each individual needs a particular gift. So our job is to figure out what that gift is that will take them on to that next level. And success is not stagnant. So the success that they're looking for right now may not be the success they need later on, but the tools may be the same. So we give as many tools as possible, and we show our students how to use those tools in order to continue being successful.
Do you have, at this time, any ideas about what you would like to see in the next couple of years as far as where LEAP goes or what LEAP is going to provide?
I think we underestimate the value of the human interaction. And LEAP pretty much brings back human interaction. We're a society of Facebook, tweeting, and everything happens on this little device that's in your hand. But I think most of us can agree that it's not necessarily a great thing. When the human interaction is lost, there's much more that's lost underneath. And it's not readily apparent, but little by little, it comes out. So I feel that LEAP is that piece that we really do have to develop, mainly because that human interaction is there. You're not going to get proper mentorship through the computer or through your phone. Yes, you can call up a friend and ask a question, but there is nothing like looking at somebody in the eye and following that body language and knowing that there is understanding there. You can't replace that. I can't see it happening anytime in the future.
If anybody in our audience had been living under a rock, they missed all of the excitement of what was the first prom held here at Indian River State College, which was put on by the LEAP program and Jenny Champagne. Jenny, tell us about that. How did the idea get started?
Promenade came from just a small conversation with about four or five students. So I agreed to do a promenade social because I wanted to show my LEAP students all of the work that goes into putting together even the smallest event. So we went knocking on doors, again, because we're low on budget. So we had to figure out, how are we going to get things? How is it that we're going to make it look something nicer than just a backyard barbecue? We had a lot of support from foundation, from student affairs, student activities. Everybody wanted to support the best that they could. But I made the students do it. The students did the legwork. They went to pitch their plan. They went to pitch the program. They had to convince other people on campus that their idea was worthy of support. And they did exactly that. We got foundation to loan us tablecloths and centerpieces. We got the theater to loan us tables. We got culinary department to provide finger foods for us. And it turned out to be an overwhelming success. And it was really on accident. It was totally by accident. But it was a delightful accident. I wish all my future accidents end up like this. Because the students are very proud of what they put together. And I'm proud of them. And the support that I gave them was minimal. And the work that they did was major. And it showed in the end product. But now they're going to start seeing end products from a different viewpoint because they know how much work goes into putting together even a 5-minute presentation. This was a 3-4 hour event. How are you going to keep everybody engaged for 3-4 hours? And it turned out to be so amazing. Our students have not stopped asking, what are we doing for Promenade 2017? We haven't sat down and talked about that yet, but it's wonderful to see that they're looking into the future about activities here on campus. That means they plan to persist here. They plan to stay here on campus and continue their education. So we're always trying to wrap education in fun. That way they don't even know it happened. They don't even realize that they learned something. So 2017, for all the students who are waiting for that, that means you've already scheduled for summer classes and fall classes, and you're thinking about spring. So 2017 Promenade is coming, and you have that to look forward to.
Thank you for listening to Pioneer Radio. Coming up next, we hear a spoken word poem from IRSC student Trey Solin, a.k.a. Character the Glitch, followed by a conversation with our Joe Phelps.
Everyone here knows what pressure is. For me, it feels like I'm standing in a house full of mirrors, staring down all of my inner demons while they try to welcome me with open arms. I feel pressured to be me. I don't want to sound conceited, even though I might be. I just want to get this off my chest. This weight that has compressed my lungs and shortened the amount of blood that reaches my brain while my heart pumps twice as hard. Did you get that? In my moments of weakness, my heart, like anybody else's, pumps twice as hard to keep you going. So why is it that so many of you need a little push from me? Why is it that I receive phone calls at 3 while you're shaking and crying, trying to explain exactly what you see when you happen to look inside yourself? Why? I'm not saying that I don't want to help. But one person shouldn't be the only thing keeping you alive. Think about what that does to them on the inside. One missed phone call, and I'm sorry, will never mean enough to your family. It's like you've damned me and blessed me at the same time. You come to me lost in the dark, but I can see the light in your eyes. You will never realize it's so difficult to be me. For some people, I've become an addiction. I've become their conviction. I've become their safe haven. So they ignore the calls from the angels that watch them. Your heaven is right around the corner. And to get there, your family shouldn't have to meet a coroner. I wonder, did I love you too hard? Did I hold you for too long? Did I pick you up one too many times? Because I know I'm only doing what every person in this room is capable of. I feel pressured to be me because when I cry and I scream, I have to navigate through hell by my damn self. I'm only 2 steps ahead of you, so when you go through it, I just got done with it. My skeletons long to have flesh again, so they take pieces from me all of the time. The devil has scorched the side of my head with his lies. This hair of mine is not my design. All of my food tastes of iron because I always bite my tongue, and my blood is bitter, so I indulge myself on every piece of candy I can find. There's so much pressure to be me. When I step on stage, I don't want to sit down. The second I'm not performing, they consider me a clown. Don't you know that these words come from my heart and my soul and my mind? Why is it you only understand me when my words rhyme? There's so much pressure to be me. I didn't go to school right away. I went out and got a job because in this world we live in, currency is the only language that everyone speaks, but that is not intelligence wasted. I'm still right here, allowing all of you to bear witness to my self-exorcism. I pray you never have to deal with my demons. They are the worst kind of monster. With no reason, they simply exist to make my day harder. When I look in the mirror, I don't even see myself anymore. I see what a racist hates. I see what those I seek mentorship from calls a child. I see inferiority. I see a caged animal. I see you. And I might just end up in the ICU because I've overdosed on the scariest drug known to man. It's called life. There's so much pressure to be me. And with that, I hope I took a little bit of the pressure off of you. Thank you.
You just heard the piece Pressure, performed by Antravius Solin, a.k.a. Character the Glitch. So yeah, you got a lot of stories. What got you interested in telling your stories?
What got me interested in telling my stories?
In this form.
In this form, I'm not going to lie to you. I started with rap. I thought I was a rapper for a very long time. But that's just because of like the music I listen to. I listen to E-40, Ice Cube, and Tupac. Those are my favorite rappers. But like, I am not a rapper. Like, I can't do it. Like, I can do it, but like, you can't get me in a place like on stage with music. The music just messes me up because I want to tell the story, and like, rap is so condensed.
So where do you draw your inspiration in creating?
My inspiration in creating, it's just my life, man. Like, I've lived through so much life for a 19-year-old. It's like, it's crazy to think about because I'm only 19.
I wouldn't think you're 19.
a lot of people are like, you're like 25, right? Like, you're 27. I'm like, nope, I'm 19. Because, like, you know, I've lived so much life in such a short amount of time that, like, it's just easier to look at parts of my life and like, this is a story I feel like telling. Like, I'm gonna tell this story right now, and I just write it and I go back and I edit it and make sure it sounds as great as possible, you know.
For your piece Pressure, where did you specifically draw inspiration from?
Okay, specifically, it was right after I graduated high school, and I was like, oh my god, I have to live the rest of my life now. Like, this is it. Like, I'm not in high school anymore. And I basically, like, freaked out. Like, I was like, having an existential crisis. I was like, what am I supposed to do with my life, man? I don't know. Like, I was 18 when I wrote it. Like, I'm 18. Like, my favorite thing to do is eat Hot Pockets and play Ninja Gaiden 2. Like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And, like, I was thinking about it. And everybody was like, you need to go to school. And people are like, you know, you got to go get a job. And somebody's like... And then, like, at the same time, in high school, I was always the guy people came to for advice. So, like, if you ever need to talk to me, I'm like, yeah, what's up? Oh, you called me at 3 a.m? It doesn't even matter. What's going on, man? Like, I was that guy who, like, was always willing to help somebody. But, like, it was just so much to deal with. And, like, I remember one day, like, I just, like, blanked out. And, like, I punched my bathroom mirror and, like... This is, like, crazy. Like, I don't recommend it. Don't punch your bathroom mirror. Like, it was expensive to replace. But I punched my bathroom mirror, and, like, I sat down afterward. Like, my hand was scraped up, and I was like, I need to write this out, man. Like, I got to write it down because I can't, like, think it out straight. So I got to write this down.
That's really with the mirror, you know, it's a reflection, you know.
Reflection of myself. Right. I was like, I got to write all this down. And it just... Everything came out. That's why, like, it's so sporadic, I guess, because it starts somewhere and it's just, there's so much packed into that one piece. But that's just because that's all that was going on at the time. Like, that's what was pressuring me.
What do you hope your audience to take away from hearing this stuff, or what about yourself? What do you hope to get out of it?
Oh my god, these are great questions. man, I've never really thought about an audience and what they take from it, to be honest with you. I stand up and I tell my story, and if you liked it, thank you. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. I can't change the past, man. I'd like to talk about it. You know, what I take from it is just like a release. It's almost like yoga. It's almost like exercise. It's like, but like exercise for the soul, you know? Like, I get to exercise those things that we never talk about. The stuff you never talk about, the skeletons in your closet, I pull them out on stage with me. We're hanging out because it's not to say that it's easy, but like, it's just refreshing to be able
therapeutic.
There you go. It's therapeutic to be able to just expel all that at once. And just, you know, it's nice.
This is Pioneer Radio. Up next, we meet Dr. Danny Huey, Director of the Division of Minority Affairs here at IRSC, and his plans to create a better atmosphere of equity and inclusion. We go to Carrie Dolzio, who talks with Dr. Huey about his efforts.
Could you give a brief description of what the Department of Minority Affairs does and how students can get involved?
First of all, we house the federally funded TRIO programs. So it's Upper Bound, St. Lucie County, Upper Bound Math and Science. Upperbaum, Indian River County, Educational Talent Search, and the collegiate arm is Student Support Services, And we also have a state-funded program called CROP, which is the College Reach Out Program. So those are pre-collegiate programs and the collegiate programs that we do in a division. But we also do all of the cultural programming that you guys see on campus, Hispanic Heritage Month, Native American History Month, all the cultural programming on campus. And also this year, well, starting last year when I first took over, we actually expanded to training, equity training, and also the student equity plan. So I'm working on a plan to ensure that all of our students are treated equitably so that we can get students out to complete. So I'm working on that as well.
What initially inspired you to take up this leadership role?
When I go into organizations, classes, things, I always wanted to be, I'm very, very competitive.
Okay.
So I always want to be the best. So I've thought about it. So what can I do to help shape the culture of the college to help underserved students so that we are the best, truly the best institution, right? And so taking on this role, it was a challenge because I had to go in and change culture. So I took on this role because I wanted the division to be better, to be seen in a different light, to be seen as a division that's very integral to the success of students on this campus.
Since Minority Affairs also sponsors Hispanic Heritage Month, what is the importance of this? What does this month mean to you?
So I think it's important because if we look at the changing demographics of our country, right? And I said someone in an interview in a workshop a couple weeks ago that we're browning as a country, right? And so we have to be cognizant of the fact that we have a population that is growing. But we also have to understand that because the population is growing, it doesn't mean that there's still equitable treatment. So for me, I think it's important that we embrace other people's cultures, understand them, and I think it'll help us be better individuals.
So I know that LEAP operates underneath Minority Affairs. Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit more about the LEAP program.
Well, the LEAP program is our, well, it started off as a smaller mentoring program within the Division of Minority Affairs, and it had such great success because the students retain from fall to fall, right? Because one of our goals as a college is retention and completion, right? Mm-hmm. So it was originally for underserved students. But because of our performance plan, we've increased it and tried to scale it up so that it includes underserved population and primarily first-time and college students.
What has been the best part of working for Minority Affairs?
Students, the high school students. Before I came to Indian River State College, even before I got a doctorate, I worked at The Ohio State University. I'm a Buckeye, go Bucks. And during the time I was in undergrad, I worked for a program called Young Scholars Program. It was a program for students from middle school through high school. They did, you know, tutoring, same thing as Upperbaum, tutoring sessions, college tours. Mm-hmm. So I did that as, you know, as an undergrad. But when I graduated a couple years later, I came back and actually worked full time in the program. So what I realized is that if we can better prepare students before they even get to college, and I think that program helped us do that. I love to see the students when they start off, the growth and maturity. So just to see them, my hope and my goal is that they're going to go somewhere to some institution and be successful.
With you being in this position, have your opinions changed on anything?
I still have hope. Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine who's a psychologist, and we were talking about this. We've been friends since high school. And he was like, I just don't believe that the world is ever going to change. And so I'm going to do my job as a therapist and try to, you know, make people healthy as best I can. I was like, but I have hope, right? I know that these things are real, right? I know these things exist. I see them every day at work. I see them when I'm in a store being followed, right? These things really happen. But I still have hope that even if I don't affect everybody at Indian River State College, if I can affect a small portion of folks, right, to start to think differently about people. So I think for me, I still have hope. And if I didn't, I probably wouldn't do this job.
Where do you see this department in the next 5 years?
Well, my hope is that we actually have a name change to equity and inclusion, which really encompasses what we're trying to do as a college, right? To be, because we can be diverse, but if we're not including the voices in those conversations, right? So my hope is that we get a name change. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But my other hope is that we have a center so that students have a place where they can come and be themselves. And just continually challenging and pushing folks to think to think about, you know, what it is they do in the classroom, outside the classroom, and how to interact with students. Because at the end of the day, everybody's goal and responsibility is to make sure that our students graduate or get a certificate so they can get a job.
What is the one way that you would encourage students to get involved?
Find something that you're passionate about and do it, right? If you're passionate about journalism, go with Dr. Brooks. If you're passionate about the arts, I mean, we have so many clubs and organizations on campus. And if it's something that you don't see, start it. That's your right as a student, right? I think the students have to find what they're passionate about and make it happen. We will, if there's somebody on campus that advises you, we'll find them. And also think outside of yourself too, right? I think that students have to sometimes, you know, we as individuals, sometimes we can be right here in our own boxes, right? Go do something that you probably would have never done before. I never knew how to crochet. I went to the crochet club. I know how to crochet now, right? I went to a couple of meetings. I was like, oh, I'm going to learn this, right? So do stuff that's not ordinary. What students can do is actually come to the programs too, right? Come to the programs. You can actually volunteer with us. We love volunteers. Like, we have food. We like people to serve food. We pass out flyers. So you can actually come and volunteer. What I'm going to do in the spring, I'm going to have a high school intern. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do that, you can shadow. I mean, I'm really happy to help students. You know, this is something that you may want to do. You never know. You might want to do this type of work. So you can come meet with me. I sit down. I go to classes. I speak to classes. So students can come to programs. They can volunteer. Anything that you want to do, we're willing to help.
Pioneer Radio's Yvonne Deem caught up with poet Dr. Octavio Quintanilla at the station.
You came from Mexico to the United States in the fourth grade.
Right.
What violence were you exposed to, and how has that affected who you are, your view of life, how you express yourself in your poetry?
Well, in Mexico, the overall violence that I was exposed to, that I was really not aware that it was a violence, was obviously the lack of things. Poverty, you know, those kind of things that later on you realize that, hey, there's an undercurrent of violence, right? And that's why people often, like my father, like I said, my father and many people from our town moved to the United States to try to make the crossing, right? Because poverty was pushing them out. Poverty was making them exiles. So there is that violence. In terms of secondhand violence, I think now with the cartel violence, that's where I think I'm affected by it, directly and indirectly. And by that I mean family members have been victimized by the cartel violence. My parents have been victimized by the just mere fact that they can't go back to their homeland, to their house that they still have in Mexico, without feeling fear, if they do go at all. So that... those elements of violence, that experience somehow, to a great extent, finds its way to my poems and to my writing. And, I think you had, like, three questions in there, but...
Your poems linger with the reader, with the surreal and morbid and sensual imagery that you incorporate in them. What emotions are you trying to inspire in your readers, and what do you want them to take from your writing?
More than anything, I want to communicate. Even though we talk about them in terms of being poems, I think most of the poems in this book have a narrative. There's a story at the core of them. That is kind of like the springboard for language play, metaphor, simile, images. And a lot of the images are, I think, like I said before, appeal to that dark element simply because I am grabbing them from the images that I talked about, the violence. And often when we talk about violence, we talk about the body, right? The violence done to the body. And what I want the reader to take is take an emotion, a complex emotion with themselves. Maybe something in the poem leads them to reflect about their own life. And maybe empathy, right? Empathy for a lot of the figures and characters that I write about that are underdogs, that are undocumented, who are violated, who are victimized, who are often forgotten, the invisible, the unseen. A little bit of empathy. I think more than anything, I would love for the reader to get that.
Being from Mexico and, you know, living a dual culture,
right.
One in Mexico and one in Texas, if you could give minority students any advice from the wisdom that you've gained from your own life and tribulations and your families as well, what would it be? What would you tell them that would make maybe them look at their situations better?
I think that whatever difficulties, you know, any student, not just minority students, are going through, there's always a solution, you know. And if you don't have it, there's always someone you can ask. And if you ask, some people are going to say no or they can't help you, but there's always going to be someone who will take a risk for you, will try to, you know, put themselves on the line to help you. I don't know, being a minority in the United States, I think the advice I give them is learn about who you are. You know, learn about your history. If you come from Cuba, learn about it. If your parents come from Cuba and you were born here, well, learn about that side of... The more you know, I think, you know, it goes back to, who was it, Aristotle? The more you know about yourself, you know thyself. Know thyself. How can you speak about yourself if you don't know where you come from, where your parents come from? And my advice for, I think, either as young students, all students, as writers, white, black, Hispanic, whatever, know who you are. Know your history, and that might become a source for your writing, you know? Because we always write about ourselves in some way.
Building a story.
Yeah, building a story, you know? We need a foundation, and often, you know, often the greatest novels were written on the foundation of the writer in terms of their history or their sense of self or whatever, you know. And I'm not necessarily just talking about writing. I'm talking about just about everything that helps you. Your confidence, your self-esteem in places and spaces that often we don't feel comfortable in, right? Either because of the color of your skin or the way you speak or where you come from or how you look or how your body looks or whatever. I mean, I think that's really tough for young people nowadays, you know, to really just be comfortable. And also believe that you belong in the space where you find yourself in. That's important. And I think all of that plays a role, you know.
So I was looking online for some of your poems, and I found this one on SoundCloud called I Remember the Days. And having been through so much loss myself recently and reflecting on my own past and questioning my own beliefs made me deeply relate to this poem. So I was wondering if you could read it for us, please.
Yeah, this is one of those poems, you know, we're talking about the darkness of the poems, and I think Danny said there's a tenderness and also... maybe those poetic leaps and moments of meditation. I think this is a perfect example of what I'm trying to do with that. I keep returning to the days. I keep returning to the days before I began to lose my hair. To the days before I lost a tooth in a bar fight. To the nights when the love of my life was not much older than my oldest daughter. I'm not lost. I am here, a bystander at the margins of this great universe, where there's no such thing as miracles. Mary never had an immaculate conception. Jesus never rose from the dead. Those who sleep well at night have never had the wrist slit by worry. The rest of us, potential suicides. Let's face it, it's hard to keep a straight face once her disappointment, puts on a gray coat, a black hat, and drives around the city looking for God, wanting to know the truth. Documents get burned every day. Things that evoke memory also get lost. Some are left behind at bus stations or at parks where people set themselves on fire with loneliness. But there must be a star in this great galaxy that knows the true place and time of my birth. I'm driving again, lit by the car's headlights. The road seems to go on forever.
And now, Bridget Fadden chats with Manny Rubio and Jerusha Toussaint about the Indian River State College Campus Coalition Government.
Could you explain a little about what CCG is, what it stands for, and what it does?
CCG stands for Campus Coalition Government. And instead of, like, you know, other colleges having a SGA, Student Government Association, at each campus, we oversee all five campuses. We help out with student activities in coordinating most of the activities, and we also help with legislative issues in the state. So we're the voice of the students.
In what ways does CCG benefit students at IRSC?
Anything you think that you can do, this is like the perfect time to do it, because this is when you're going to get the most support. When you're done with your degree, you're going to be looking for the support. But when you're in CCG or when you're a student on campus, you have the support. All you have to do is ask, and more than likely you will receive it. It's one of the things that I always think about when I think of CCG is having the opportunity to live your dream before you actually live your dream. So you're just planning what you want to do, and you're doing it in every step, shape, and form that you can, and you get so much exposure to the people that you wouldn't meet on a daily basis, and it's not doing anything but preparing me for a better future tomorrow.
This gets you to the path of a better future. For me, it's leadership and experience.
Why is it so important to be the voice for the student body?
Something that I live by is, in order to be part of the change, you got to be the change. I'm one of those people, you know, that if I see something that I don't feel right, I will state it and say, I think this is not going right. But if you keep on saying that and, you know, don't do anything about it, then what makes you any different?
Yes. That's exactly how I feel, too. It's an honor to be the voice of the student body. And I love it because it represents diversity, because there's so much diversity on our e-board. And there's so much diversity within the students as well.
What's the hardest part about being a part of CCG?
Time management. It is definitely a job where you have to, you know, make sure that you keep up with your team. All of us have to keep up with each other, you know, because we're technically a family within a year, where we have to like each other no matter what. And you have to make sure also that you're being the voice of the students, and you always want to catch yourself. If you're saying something like, I'm doing this or I'm doing that, you got to catch that, because you're the voice of the students. I can't even stress enough how amazing our team is, because Jerusha, Taylor, Crystal, and Kristen all have each other's back, no matter what. Although there are challenges, the good thing is when you have a strong team, the challenges don't really matter.
What advice do you have for all the clubs on campus and for those interested in starting their own club?
My advice would be just like Nike always says, just do it. Just do it. The only thing, like, I know a lot of people are afraid of failing. You know, I myself, too, was afraid of failing. But there's no such thing as failing if you look at it. There's only a chance for opportunity to learn. It's going to give you an opportunity to grow. And it's going to give you an opportunity to see what you can do and what are your weak points. And then if you do have a weak point, you learn who you can call on. So I would say, just like Nike, just go out there, do what you got to do. And then if it doesn't work, go back to the drawing board and then try again.
Just go out there. You don't have to wait for an event to recruit. If you see someone, talk to them.
Who are your go-to people when you need help organizing something?
My go-to people definitely is first the team. Because honestly, they are the ones that are the go-getters. They'll get it done. And without your team, you're nothing, you know? Like I always tell them, although I may be president, Jerusha might be vice president, and everybody has a position, I see it as we're all senators. I'm just the chair, but we're all equal.
If I'm planning an event, if I'm doing something like looking for ideas, I go to the students because I want to see what they feel about it. Because my team, we could feel one way because we've been with each other so long. So eventually we're going to start to think the same and we're going to understand what we want and how we should have it done. But once I go to the students, I can understand what they want and how they feel about a certain thing.
How has being a part of CCG personally affected your student life?
With my life, it's changed a lot because I've got to meet a lot of people that are great leaders, and it's made me realize that I really do want to stay in a leadership role. I think that that's the best part of my student life, that I was able to meet so many diverse people that have so many talents. And I realized that being a leader isn't you doing everything yourself, but more of finding the people that best are suited in those positions.
It's affected my student life in the best way possible. I'm going to start off with we had breakfast with Dr. Massey. And for the longest, I was trying to figure out, what do I want to do? I was like, well, because my huge inspiration was like, I want to be a rapper. Dr. Massey goes, okay, so what does everyone want to do? I go, you know, because I don't know exactly how to go about answering the question. So I say, well, I want to do public administration. That was one of them. Or I want to be a teacher. These two things I felt like would be, you know, the more normal, smarter thing to do when you're a student and you don't really, you know, you want to dream, but sometimes everybody's like, yo, you're dreaming too big. Yeah. So Dr. Massey goes, you want to do what you want to do. And because if you do what someone else wants you to do, then you're not living your dream. So I say, okay. And then I just leave it as that. I'm like, all right, I understand. So I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, you know, I should just really be a rapper and go for it.
Do you have any wisdom that you'd like to leave for any students listening in?
Keep pushing, honestly. Because, like, when things are not going the way you expect it to go, just hold on, because that means something is going to go exactly the way you want it to go. And it's going to give you that push to be like, wow, I overcame everything. So for students that feel like, man, this is it. I just want to drop this class. I just want to withdraw. I just want to give up. Don't ever give up.
I have two to say. Number one is don't be afraid to say no. That is the most powerful statement I have ever heard. Because if you know you can't do something, then say no. It's not going to hurt the person that you're telling it to. And if you don't do it, it's going to hurt more you in the long run. And once you learn how to hone that statement to say no, then I would say get out of your comfort zone. And do what you feel might not be something that you thought wouldn't be something you would do. And in reality, that's what you're best at.
You're listening to Pioneer Radio. The more that you read, the more things you will know. The more that you learn, the more places you'll go. The best that you'll hear is on Radio Pioneer. And now, some wisdom from the Cat in the Hat.
And then fast as a fox, the Cat in the Hat came back in with a box. A big red wood box. It was shut with a hook.
Now look at this trick,
said the cat.
Take a look.
Then he got up on top with the tip of his hat.
I call this game Fun in a Box,
said the cat.
In this box are two things I will show to you now. You will like these two things,
said the cat with a bow.
I will pick up the hook. You will see something new. Two things, and I call them Thing One and Thing Two. These things will not bite you. They want to have fun.
Then out of the box came Thing Two and Thing One.
Yay!
And they ran to us fast. They said,
how do you do? Would you like to shake hands with Thing One and Thing Two?
And Sally and I did not know what to do, so we had to shake hands with Thing One and Thing Two.
What do you like most about performing Cat in the Hat?
I like performing Cat in the Hat because it's very... there's a lot of everything happening at once, and it's a lot more fun than like maybe like a serious drama, because you're always running around doing something. I'm always sweating. Whatever, there's so much sweat everywhere.
I love Cat because of the high energy that we have, and like we're all like great friends now, and like we're running and sweating and we're just having a like great time, and the energy is like so upbeat. It's so much fun to do, and I really hope that portrays like as we're acting.
Yeah, I definitely say this play has a much more physical aspect to it than normal, and that's always fun.
It gives the audience a chance to like use their imagination to really see what we're doing on stage without like an actual like ball or something. The audience has to imagine what we're seeing, and hopefully we can help them do that.
How was the rehearsal process for this particular show?
It's different. It's very different. We have to wake up at 7 a.m. Well, be there at 7. Rehearsal starts at 7. So we have to be there at 7 a.m. and rehearse from 7 to 9. And then for most of us, we have classes at 9:30. So that's been a huge experience for us, learning how to manage our time and manage the show and still keep our energy levels, because we want to rehearse like how we're going to perform. So finding the energy at 7 a.m.
Yeah, I thought it would be a lot more difficult to get here, wake up at like 6 and then get here at 7. But it was pretty easy to adjust my like sleep schedule for that. And yeah,
it hasn't been easy for me. I've had a very hard time.
Yeah, it has been easy for me either. I usually get done studying and doing homework at like midnight, and then I sleep for like four or five hours. Yeah, 5 hours of sleep. But it's all worth it to see the show come together. So.
Yeah, some of us were eating breakfast, we're still like waking up and drinking our coffees and just trying to get our day started.
Yeah.
It's definitely a waker-upper.
What else is up on the plate for the performing arts?
Well, for the performing arts, Cat in the Hat kind of kicks off our season. We start with Cat. And then next we'll be having Bly Spirit and Night Watch. And we'll also be doing Man of La Mancha. So it's a very busy season, really fun season. And I'm personally really excited to see how the season goes and all of us working on it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I am indeed a cat, and this, indeed, is a hat. In English, cat, hat. In French, chapeau. It really is quite obvious, don't you know? In English, cat, hat. In French, chapeau. Un, deux, trois, quatre, cinq. Here we go.
This is Pioneer Radio. And finally, Cary Delcio shares with us his thoughts on the forms of communication we utilize today and how these might be different in tomorrow's world.
The amount of information in the world is as endless as the universe itself. Such a powerful tool can help shape, change, and improve the ways in which we talk and communicate in the future. Think of what sparks our dialogue. We've yet to read about every war and victory speech. We've yet to hear every song and interpret its meanings. We've yet to watch every politician campaign or see every dream come true. We've yet to fully explore the deepest regions of our oceans or travel to the distant corners of our galaxy. Find life beyond Earth, or even discover every creature that lives on our own planet. And think of what communication will be like many years into the future. Mark Zuckerberg believes that one day we'll be able to communicate with each other telepathically. The question at hand is simply, what does communication mean to you?
What does communication mean to me? Being honest with someone, being truthful.
Communication is the relationships that drives us to express ourselves to one another. It also helps us understand each other's problems, our needs.
The most powerful aspect of communication is the issue of caring. If you don't care, it shows in everything that you do.
I think without communication, you have no foundation, because communicating properly builds that tree so that it can flourish properly, in a sense. So I guess communication is just everything.
Technology is everything from phones through to emails to social media to get information and to have conversations.
To have an emotional connection with another human being.
Bill Piacese, and I'd like to thank you for listening to the second show of Pioneer Radio in conjunction with WQCS and Indian River State College. A special thank you to WQCS Station Manager Brian Lane, IRSC Librarian Mia Tignor, Dr. Matthew Brooks, Director of the Center for Media and Journalism Studies, and Dr. Bruce Fraser, Dean of Communications, Humanities, and Social Sciences. It's been our pleasure to bring you this second edition, and we look forward to having you back soon for our next show. Remember, it's a big world out there. Go explore it.
Autobots, transform!
NPR for the Treasure Coast. This is 88.9 FM, WQCS, Fort Pierce.